Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations in art, culture and ideas. And today we're going to continue my fascination with food, except we're going to be looking at a very specific, interesting development in food in terms of veganism. So veganism is the topic of the day. My guest today is Chef Yin. She's otherwise known as Raw Chef Yin, raw chef being the fact that she doesn't cook her food, she presents it raw. So, Yin, thank you so much for being on the show.
Hi, Sharad.
Hi. Okay, so you're the author of about 7 books, E and Printed, and Guilt-Free Desserts is one, and Raw Vegan Delights, the Asian Edition, is the other of the 7 books that you have, right?
That's right.
I want to ask you first, though, about your journey. Before we get to raw veganism, your journey in there. I mean, how did you grow up? What did you eat? And how did that transform over time?
Okay, so when I grew up, I think we were considered as a healthy family, or what I thought was healthy, you know, because we ate rice, we wouldn't drink coffee, we don't really eat deep fried food, we had veggies, but we also ate meat as well. But I know that my mom used to make us a lot of carrot sticks and celery sticks for snacks, so maybe that was the beginning of my journey and me not realizing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Then, and do you know why your mother presented what would be a kind of slightly atypical Malaysian meal? Because deep fried food is actually so Malaysian. It's almost like we don't really have a cuisine. We just have a technique, and that is frying everything. Yeah. I mean, I'm in Langkawi where I saw somebody deep fry an already made burger.
Whoa.
They dipped it in batter and then they deep fried the whole thing. So frying is Malaysian. Okay. So how did your mother, was it your mother's choice or your dad's?
I'm not sure. Conversation? Maybe it has something to do with the fact that when I was 3 and 4 years old, we were in the UK. So I don't know whether people, you know, used to snack on.
Yeah, they deep fried their Mars bars. I don't know. Whatever it is. Okay, so you had this thing. So you already had a start in terms of good nutrition, at least a consciousness that, you know, eating good food is important. And then what happened? I mean, in terms of your own education?
Yeah, I think in the early 90s, I read about how meat is not so good for your body. So I started cutting down on that. But it was only in 2014. And it's quite funny. I just bought an ice cream maker and I was just looking for healthy ice cream recipes. And what happened was I came across a picture of a raw vegan lasagna. And I went like, oh, this looks interesting. And I happened to have all the ingredients in my fridge and I made it. And it blew my mind because firstly, it tasted so good. And secondly, I had so much energy. And I was like, because, you know, lasagna, you're expecting to have a food coma after eating that. But instead, I felt so energized. And so I started doing more research into raw food. And then I realized like, oh, you know, heating up food on high heats will like kill a lot of the nutrients.
Okay. Yeah. But did you have a background? I mean, would you study in gastronomy or culinary arts or something?
No, not really. I actually have a law degree.
Okay.
And then I was did not practice law. I was in corporate communications for 15 years, and then I quit the corporate job, and I was just like, you know, trying to discover my passion, and I kind of like fell into raw food,
right.
Or maybe the universe was, you know, nudging me into
nudging
that
you there.
Direction.
Well, you know, so I have revealed this to the audience that you are probably, you're close to my age, but you look like 30 years younger than me. So,
30 years.
So, yeah, because I grew up at a time in the 80s going to university where actually vegetarianism was very fashionable.
Mm.
You know, the Smiths were playing, they had an album called Meat is Murder, and that was the slogan of the time, right?
Right.
The idea that somehow we had to turn our back on this industrialized production of meat because it was cruel, because it was not healthy, and so on and so forth. But I think mostly because it was cruel. So cruelty was a central tenet of the vegetarianism that I was introduced to. Though I come from a South Asian family where, you know, vegetarianism is part of the culture, right? So
yeah.
I'm interested in that conversation, where the conversation is going, because you come from the health angle. But there was also a cruelty angle. Was that ever part of your own makeup? The idea that somehow meat production was cruel and therefore we shouldn't step away from it?
I think you know, I've heard of it, and I heard of pita and things like that, you know, but it never really kind of struck me until I became vegan, and then I discovered, you know, the atrocities of factory farming, you know, and then the effect that animal agriculture had on the environment and things like that. Because in fact, yeah, and if you're talking about an environmental point of view, I remember in the also around that same time, right, in the early 90s, you know, they were talking about the hole in the ozone layer, and then so I was like, you know, recycling, I was making sure I took short showers, I made sure like I turn off all the lights whenever I leave and all that, but I didn't realize the impact about reducing meat or like not eating meat and how it can help the environment only until after I became vegan.
Right.
Then all that became very clear to me. I'm sure I've heard about it before, but there's a disconnect.
Yeah. So what's interesting is that I guess we come to the personal choices in different routes, right?
Mm-hmm.
What dominated, I think, the vegetarian discussion in the 80s was cruelty, not even the environment. The environment, I think, crept in on the back of the cruelty argument.
Yeah.
But, and today we are faced with a range of options. So there's veganism, there's raw veganism, I think, and you're going to make that distinction for us later.
Yeah.
There's vegetarianism, which is kind of mainstream, especially in many places in Asia, right? China has a vegetarian cuisine culture,
mm-hmm.
India has a vegetarian cuisine culture, and so on and so forth. But there's also this new idea of being flexible, flexitarianism, right? And I want to ask you about that. When you look at the current discourse, the current options that are presented to people, how would you make a distinction between the flexitarian option, the vegetarian option, the vegan option?
Right. So for the flexitarian option, from what I understand, is about, you know, they eat like about 80% plant-based, and then, you know, when they want to indulge and have some meat and all that, that's when they do that. And then if it's vegetarian, vegetarians don't eat any animals, but some of them do drink milk, some of them do eat eggs.
And so then, that might implicate them in industrialized forms of production.
That's right.
Okay.
And then when it's vegan, we like I mentioned, it's not so much of a diet, it's a philosophy, it's a lifestyle. We're against animal exploitation, so it doesn't just cover food, right? It also covers like any exploitation of animals, you know. So I don't wear leather or fur or silk. You know, I had to go around shopping for non-leather shoes, non-leather handbags. Yeah.
Okay, so this is just, it's a philosophy. I want to ask you that, though people challenge you, and this is perhaps a caricature of vegans, is that vegans are also very super moralistic, you know, and therefore...
Militant and angry vegans.
Militant and angry vegans. Is that a fair description of... can you become a vegan without becoming angry? Is that possible?
It's funny. Well, so when I first became vegan, I wasn't that angry. But I think because it's also because I came more from a health point of view and a health angle, because, you know, I healed from my eczema. I had much better, you know, immunity. I stopped falling sick. But then when I started finding out about, like, oh my God, they're like crushing male baby chicks, you know, because just so that other people can eat eggs and things like that. That's when you start getting angry.
And there's nothing wrong with getting angry. I think the world sometimes is the better place when people get angry at the right things. But okay, so how would you argue? Because vegetarianism, to me, sounds like already a moral standpoint when it comes to vegetarian. Because of course there are religious reasons why people are vegetarian and stuff. What would you argue against the vegetarians, and what is the argument against vegetarianism?
I guess because the whole idea is you don't want to cause animals suffering, right? You don't want to cause them pain. Like I said, you know, so the vegetarians who drink milk, or anyone who drinks milk, you're already causing pain and suffering to the cows.
What if they're free range? So this is to argue. So if you bring this other, I know I'm being argumentative,
because I want to clarify for
myself. Because the natural world, as it were, has all these processes, and you know, milk is natural and so on.
Yeah.
So if it was cruelty-free, meaning the free-range chickens, and they've lay whatever legs they want, eggs where they want, and their cows roam freely.
Right.
Would that change the equation?
But to be honest, they call it free-range, but they allow the chickens to go out maybe for like 4 hours, and then they all go back into the coop, and they're all still suffering, you know? And when they say it's free-range cows, I mean, you're talking about... Well, I was talking about milk, right?
Milk,
I mean, they still artificially inseminate the cows so that the mother can give milk and then give birth, and then you have the milk production, right? And then after that, they yank the babies away from the mother. There's still suffering involved.
Okay. You know? So you wouldn't concede to... Because there are a lot of traditional communities, small scale and such, that do take milk and do take dairy products. And there is an argument that, and I think the Eat Lancet report and all these things suggest that some animal protein is necessary. Necessary for pregnant women, it's necessary for children, for their development. How would you make an argument against those kinds of perspectives?
I remember reading up, because when I was preparing for the talk, I remember reading up, I think it was the American Dietetic Association, and there was also another association saying that, you can be vegan throughout all stages of life, including pregnancy. So I think for every, there's always an argument for both sides, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And we're going to go to your side after the break, which is raw veganism. I'm very excited about that. Stay tuned to Let's Talk. Welcome back to Let's Talk. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me is Chef Yin, better known as Raw Chef Yin, because of the kind of food she prepares. And I'm not going to say cook, because actually cooking is anathema to raw veganism, right? So tell us, what is the problem with cooking, Yin? Come on.
Well, I've discovered that when you cook, you tend to cook your vegetables or whatever you cook on very high heat, right? At least... 100 to 200 degrees Celsius, and that a lot of times that will destroy a lot of the nutrients in the food, the minerals, the life enzymes, and then that's why we still feel very tired and sluggish sometimes after eating, especially after banana leaf rice. Yeah. However, if you eat it raw, you maintain most of the nutrients. You get, most of the nutrients. And
let's put the two questions that come out of this, right?
All right.
One is, cooking is a transformation of food, right? And the produce that you put in, is all food edible raw, or do some foods still need to be cooked?
I think most of them are, but not every single one. So usually, like things like potatoes, we don't encourage people to eat it raw. Mm. I think tapioca is another one, but the focus is more on tender leafy greens, fruits, and handful of nuts and seeds. That's the focus when it comes to raw veganism.
Okay, yeah. And you're saying that provides you the full complement of nutrition at any stage in life. That was the argument from part one, remember?
That was for veganism.
Okay.
For raw veganism?
Is it sufficient? I mean...
So I know of raw vegan families, and I know they've had, like, some of them have had raw vegan babies. Mm. But I think you need to eat a large variety of food, a diverse variety of vegetables and fruits to make sure that you get all your nutrients. Mm. There are a lot of apps out there, chronometer and all that
where happy you can cow.
Sorry,
was Happy Cow another
Happy Cow is more where to find the food.
Oh.
But these are if you really want to know exactly what your macros and micros are and whether you're getting everything in, you can actually key those into key in all the food that you're eating for the day, so it will actually help calculate to make sure that you're on track if you want to. So right. That's what some people do, actually.
All right, okay, so nutrition is one part of it, but there's also and Malaysians, will fight you to the death.
Yes.
About flavor.
Yes.
And about the experience of food. So tell us about it. I mean, what does raw veganism present to those who consume the food that you produce, that you prepare?
Right, okay. So like I said, you know, it's fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds. It's minimally processed or unprocessed. And but because some people just think like, oh my God, this is so boring, or I can't eat this, right? So you can prepare it in a way to make it more presentable and more appetizing. So that is where we use the dehydrator to heat it up, but not above 45 degrees Celsius, so that you still, the nutrients still remain intact, and then it's, it becomes slightly more interesting. So when I trained, I learned how to make, it was more of Western food, but what I wanted to do was, you know, take those techniques and apply them to Malaysian food instead, or Asian food. So yeah, I've come up with my version of nasi lemak, there's rendang, oh my God, that's so awesome.
With tempeh?
No. With mushrooms.
Mushrooms.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I know jackfruit's also a very popular kind of substitute,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Very tasty. I do want to say the challenge, I guess, would be to take young people and, you know, and present them with vegan food and ask them. Though I must say, I don't think it's all on the vegans. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of people have been weaned on a particular kind of taste, these industrial flavors, right? Mm. We think that's what's tasty now, just because we've grown up with over-sugared, over-salted, yes, oily food, and
true,
we think that's real. And natural tastes just don't do it for us anymore. How do you challenge the human palate to accept a raw vegan cuisine?
You know, actually, you can change how your palate, how your tongue tastes the food after a while if you get exposed to, you know, raw food for some time. Maybe for some people it takes like maybe up to at least 3 weeks. You know, then you won't be craving the salt and the sugar and the oil and all that. Yeah, but what I do is I play around with a lot of herbs. So like I said, you know, for my rendang, I still use the herbs and spices that we use in the traditional rendang. It's just that the way of preparing it might just take like slightly longer because it's in the dehydrator for a long time. But I still use, so you still have those familiar flavors.
All right, so the coconut in the rendang will still,
yes,
be there and so,
yeah,
on and so forth. Okay, so could you talk us very quickly through the types of essential techniques or processes that are used in raw veganism that differ from traditional cooking?
Oh, okay, all right. So we usually use a food processor to process things. So like, you know, if you want to make cauliflower rice, so you process cauliflower florets in a food processor until it becomes rice-like consistency. There's also a blender, you know, if you want to make broths, soups, dressings, so you can blend up all your ingredients. There's also what I really enjoy is a food dehydrator. So you can make like breads, or I make dosai or pizza or wraps in it, because there's it works with a fan blowing out hot air. You know, so it acts as if it's an oven, but it's just a low temperature oven.
Right, and then, again, it's about maintaining the nutritional value.
Yep.
Is there a challenge for ordinary people? I say ordinary, you and I are probably ordinary as ordinary gets in that sense, ordinary middle class people, to kind of make this shift. Is this something that's scalable, or is it going to be a kind of a niche kind of thing that's, you know, for people who have time and perhaps a lot of money also?
Right.
Because that's the other criticism of, you know, the vegan option, which has become, that's extraordinarily expensive.
I really disagree that it's expensive, because I don't think I'm spending more money now, unless you go into like, you know, the superfoods and or you want to buy like all the imported ingredients. I mean, I try and focus more on local ingredients. I mean, I've been pushing a lot for ulam and all that. I mean, if you buy vegetables, it's cheaper than buying meat, right? That's how I feel.
Per kilo, yes,
yeah,
absolutely, right?
Yeah, and so, then you can always just start with something very simple. Just use your cutting board and a knife. And then there are some gadgets, but I think the price has gone down quite a bit from when I first started in 2014. And now in 2021, you can buy a lot of the, you know, the equipment online from Lazada, and they have, you know, OEM versions, which are very affordable, actually.
Okay, so you're saying the setup is okay. There's one kind of problem, though, and I think we're all starting to realize this, and it's starting to make headlines, which is that even our vegetables don't contain the kind of nutrients they used to. So there's a kind of nutrient deficit even in vegetables because of farming techniques, because of all range of things, maybe climate change and all this. So how do you address that if the produce yourself is deficient? Is it something that you're concerned about? Is that somehow you can factor in terms of food preparation?
I mean, I'm not so concerned. I mean, if you're going to be eating meat, the animals are also eating the produce, right? So wouldn't you be worried about that as well?
Yeah. So that is if it was something toxic. But the lack of nutrients is another issue, right? It's another dimension of the problem. Yeah. So because if the argument as you're making it is about the nutritional value of the vegan option, then how do you address that? Where do we go to can your, as it were, what you do be divorced from farming techniques and the whole production system that goes before it?
I mean, I try as much as possible to get vegetables that are organic or organically grown. I do understand that organic vegetables may be more expensive. So I think nowadays there are options where, you know, you can find organically grown vegetables. And because of the lockdown, there's a lot of things, a lot of places and a lot of farmers, they came up with online delivery options. So it's so much easier now compared to maybe like 5 years ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think, though, that's very important transformation in the vegan thing, is to think of the whole supply chain.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know in different contexts where there is a concern to make sure that we have, and I think Malaysia has something called the Good Agricultural Practices Yardstick as a way of getting farmers to put, institute agricultural practices that have a net benefit down the line. So basically, we're getting nutritious food, however you prepare it, at the end of the day, right?
There are some farmers who are they're very passionate about that, and that's what they actually really want to do. And I think, because I know that there's a community out there, you know, that are growing biodynamically grown food as well. So I, like right now, I'm getting my vegetable box, you know, from them. So again, number one, because you're getting a weekly surprise box, the price is going down, and you're also supporting,
Right, so you're not choosing your vegetables, they're chosen for you, and then you just have to be creative and do whatever you find in the box, right?
Yeah, but it's very exciting, you see, because then you know, it's like a surprise, and you wake up and you're like, oh, what should I do today? And all that. And you also, because then you are eating seasonally, right? You're eating the best veggies that come out for, during that time.
Yeah. So I think the best advertisement for veganism is you, Yin, at this point in time, because you do look 20 years younger than you are. So I'm not going to reveal your age, but I can say that much. Okay, so where does somebody go, Yin, if they want to start to think about changing or transforming their own eating habits and move towards or wholly adopt a raw vegan diet? How could they do that? How could you help them?
Okay, so right now I'm conducting online courses, so they can check out rawchefyin.gumroad.com. I have about 24 courses and, like I said, you know, like six ebooks, on how to make raw vegan food. And
are there communities that people can plug themselves into that kind of support each other in their journey towards veganism?
You know, so communities, there is a Malaysian Vegan Society. There's also a Malaysian Vegetarian Society. They used to organize a lot of events and meetups and potlucks and gatherings. That kind of had to stop, but I think that has started again. So I think recently, you know, there have been potlucks and gatherings and talks and all that. I also do a lot of free demos online, actually. So I do like Facebook Live, I do YouTube Live, I do Instagram Live.
Right. So it's raw Chef Yin. That's how you find you online,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me in the conversation today.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Yin.
Thank you.
So I was speaking to Raw Chef Yin. She's the author of many books, 7 books, in fact. One is Guilt-Free Desserts, Raw Vegan Delights, the Asian Edition. Two of her 7 books. And she's been on talking about raw veganism. That's all we have for you this week. I'm Sharad Kutan, only for Astro 180.